Hey, it's Zach. In this episode, ESPN's Dave McMenamin and I discuss the West leading Los Angeles Lakers, one of the big stories of the season. Don't forget to subscribe to the Low Post podcast so that you don't miss any new episodes. And please rate us 5 stars, make me so happy, and review us as well. But before we get to today's episode, I want to remind you about another great NBA podcast, the Woj Pod with the one and only Woj. On the latest episode, Woj spoke with Zion Williamson. That seems big. David Griffin and Alvin Gentry right after Zion's NBA debut. You can find the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, the Low Post.
Welcome to the Low Post podcast, where it continues to be Lakers week here on the Low Post. We had Danny Green in a couple of days ago, and joining us, one of my favorite guests. I always like when we're in the same city together. Dave McMenamin, our Lakers guy. How are you?
I'm doing great, Zach. Great to see you. Great to be in this beautiful office for the first time. And tough act to follow. Danny Green dropping gems, like the whole team watching you on Netflix.
If they had filmed the podcast, it would have shown me shrugging in total ignorance of what you is.
Penn Badgley doesn't do it for you?
That's a person?
I think that's the main actor.
I felt really, I'm sure it's a good show. I just literally have never even heard of it.
Okay.
Like, there are other shows that I'm out on, but I'm aware of
right.
them. That's big news.
I think it's interesting. It wouldn't be the show I would pick that they would all watch.
There's 100% chance that Dwight wants to get them into like SpongeBob SquarePants. 100% chance. I forgot to ask Danny Green one thing that I'm, two things. Number one, I forgot to ask him about the status of his pet snakes. I believe one has died.
Oh, is that right?
And second of all, I can't believe of all people, I forgot to ask him about being the greatest transition defender in the history of the NBA. Danny, that's like Danny Green's superpower. He's like a normal guy. And then a fast break happens and he turns into like a combination of LeBron and Hakeem Olajuwon at the same time. Forgot. Let's off the top, let's save the Lakers for a second. We got to do 10 minutes. The most anticipated debut, I guess, since LeBron occurred last night. Zion Williamson played 18 minutes for the New Orleans Pelicans in a loss that actually matters, that it puts them 5 games behind the Spurs in the loss column. 22 points, and I think as we all expected, Dave, 0 dunks and 4 3-pointers for Zion Williamson, 4 of 4 shooting. Boy, was that fourth quarter a hell of a lot of fun. Anything interesting that popped out to you about Mr. Williamson? Other than, I guess, the commentary was a lot about how he looked out of shape. I wasn't listening. I had it on. It was late at night. I had it on mute.
I covered the Lakers game, and then I got to watch some of the end of the game, and then I watched a ton of highlights last night and this morning. The lob catch from Lonzo was like, even though he didn't finish with the dunk, that was
baby.
Cool to see. Like, okay, there's a little glimpse of what this could be. I really liked a long, I think it was a defensive rebound. No, he got the ball over Poeltl and brought it up in transition and found Etuan Moore with like a chest pass from half court. And Etuan caught it in stride and finished at the hoop. And I was like, oh, there's some vision. Actually, his first pass, too, to a cutting Ingram.
He had a great assist.
Yeah. I like that. The 3-point shooting, I mean, it's great to go 4 for 4. I'm not trying to poo-poo that, but it was really terrible perimeter defense.
Well, they just left him open,
yeah.
which teams are going to do. And, like, the math now says he's shooting 100% from three, so you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But the math will say that you should do that, and teams will do that until he consistently does that. But, yeah, 4 of 4 is better than 0 of 4. He reminded me of – and again, it's one game. So let's just all overreact to one game and acknowledge that we're overreacting to one game. He reminded me of like Julius Randle and Draymond Green with like an IQ somewhere like 2/3 of the way from Julius Randle to Draymond Green from low to high.
Yeah.
And like with super duper athleticism that neither of those guys could touch.
Right.
That like when he grabs and goes, that's exciting.
Yeah. That second jump, a lot of guys talk about that. And there was one play where he caught the ball on the block, spun middle, Poeltl blocked him, but he grabbed the ball after it was deflected and just went right
like
back
on
up.
The other side
yeah,
of the
on
basket.
The other side, and was right at the rim and scored. And that to me shows like that special athleticism. And also like I liked the spin move he made on Poeltl. Now he got blocked, but still I liked that footwork that he showed.
Well, people can't be messing around with Jakob Poeltl on the block. That dude is blocking shots left and right this year. Zion lived up to the hype. I mean, there's no question about it. He lived up to the hype.
I mean, basic numbers. 22 points in 18 minutes. LeBron had 25 points in 42 minutes in his debut.
22, 7, 3 dimes, 5 turnovers, not awesome. And he had a couple, he definitely had a couple, like, he's driving, and then, like, the dude controlling the video game controller threw the controller on the floor, and, like, the guy just stops moving, and the ball was gone. Like, that happened a few times. Maybe that, you know, that's just, again, getting reacclimated. I think, personally, you know, look, they lost. First of all, they lost.
Yeah.
He was plus 3, so obviously it's not his fault. But I do think they have all the interesting questions to answer with Zion that we thought they did. Like, it was interesting how fast they moved to Zion at center.
Mm-hmm.
No Favors, no Melly, just Zion at center. So how are Zion and Favors going to work? How is the spacing going to work? And then finding, like, in the fourth quarter, I believe there were 0 seconds of overlap between Ingram and Zion. And so, like, how is that fit going to work? Ingram has spent this entire season, I put him on my all-star team today. He spent this entire season dominating the ball and two great results. Mm-hmm. Not dominating it, but doing enough.
Right.
How is that going to work with Zion? And, like, as talented as he is, those questions, like, you can get 8 games of uneven play and chaos trying to figure that out before you start figuring it out. And they don't have 8 games to scuffle.
No, they're in the race, and they made up all this ground. And the question is, like, there was a frustration factor I felt from Alvin Gentry to some degree. David Griffin went on Adrian Wojnarowski's podcast and said that the coaching staff wasn't super down with this strict minute regimen for Zion. And Griff said, I don't care. And the training staff made the call, and they were tasked with monitoring whether Zion was showing any sign of fatigue. And if he was, he had to come out. And, like, I've learned that basketball, kind of the margin between winning and losing is when both teams are fatigued, you can, you know, kind of still show out. And that could be a tough pill to swallow for Alvin and the coaching staff, is they are in this tight race here. All the games matter. If Zion can help them win games, and he, you know, he's really just has to use this as, like, advanced conditioning, it could be a frustrating finish to the season for them.
It is going to be interesting because they do have a very easy schedule, and one that's evenly split between home and road. So it's not one of those easy schedules that, like, you look at the road games and it's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
But now they are, as I said, 5 games behind the Spurs for the loss column. God help me, I haven't done tiebreakers yet. I can't get there yet. I can't do tiebreakers till March. I have no idea what the season series is between the Spurs and the Pelicans. I don't care.
Give your mind a break.
They are also behind the Suns, the Blazers, and the Grizzlies. And 538's probability thing has them as, like, a gargantuan chance to get in. Like, so higher, like, whoa, what's going on here? I don't necessarily buy that. It's hard to jump 3 teams. And, like, the Grizzlies, they can't – it's not like they can go young. They're already going young.
Right.
The Blazers are going to keep trying.
Nurkic just practiced this week, right?
Yeah. And I would love to see Nurkic play because I'm tired of seeing his outfits. I get distracted by his outfits on the bench. And the Suns are going to keep trying, and the Spurs are going to keep trying. So it's going to be hard to leapfrog all those teams. And I said on this podcast maybe a week ago with Arnovitz that the consensus among the other 29 teams – was that the Pelicans were in sort of a stand pat mode with some of their trade guys. I'm not sure that's the case a week and a half later. I think we're going to hear some Pelicans buzz on sell trades as the deadline approaches. That's all I'm going to say for now. But Zion is, I can't wait till the next game. This is exciting. It's fun to have this thing.
That's what I'm, like, we got this one and we're going to analyze it, and we rightfully so, but there's going to be 2 and 3 and we're going to watch Zion the rest of the year. It's going
to
be fun.
It's fun to have, like, the trade deadline is usually this thing where, like, oh, there's all this new stuff now, but, like, we got another thing. It's like another new little present to unwrap. It's exciting.
Right.
The other thing I'm interested in, look, this is boring as but I don't care. Like, defensively, it's going to be interesting to watch him, particularly if he's going to be at center, because the Spurs went at him in the pick and roll last night.
Yeah.
They tested his conditioning, and he played defense with his arms down. And he had some possessions where his footwork was really good, and you could see the potential. But, like, that's going to be a testing ground for him as the season goes on. But, boy, is it exciting. As you said, and Lonzo, your old buddy, he's been balling out lately.
Yeah.
And he had a drive last night from the right wing where it was the kind of drive where, like, all of a sudden, his defenders are a little closer to him than they used to be because he's shooting so many threes. And he just blew by a guy and made a layup. I was like, ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and he has the length. I mean, if he does get half a step on a guy, he can extend that kind of Nash layup maneuver that he made so popular when he was playing. In terms of the trade market thing, I mean, I think Jrue Holiday is a name that we could certainly see being moved.
We'll see. Yeah. We got how many days? I don't know. There's some amount of days. 2 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks from today.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right.
February 6th? Yeah, 2 weeks.
February 6th. Dave, do you disclose your age publicly?
Yeah, sure. It's out there.
How old are you?
Too old.
Are you under 40?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm over 40.
Yeah. I'm 37.
So you might be able to tell me the answers to this.
Okay.
Tell me what my reaction should be to Kyle Kuzma being spotted at a Brooklyn Italian restaurant with Vanessa Hudgens. How big a deal is this?
It's just awesome. Like, kudos to Kuz. Like, we were joking amongst the Laker writers last night that we just go up and, like, give him a pound in the locker room. Like, good for you, dog. Like, that's awesome. Because you're young, rich, 6'7". Living your life, man. Vanessa Hudgens, I mean, I think she came on the scene for High School Musical, which was a while ago. But,
didn't see that one.
Just a beautiful young woman. Like,
still acting? Still famous? Still a famous person?
I think still a famous person, yeah. Was that the game last night, too? I mean, the dinner probably went
pretty
well.
Courtside?
Courtside, yeah.
Kuz didn't have a great game last night.
Good second half.
Yeah, good second half.
7 rebounds, 2 blocks?
Yeah, he got up for a block, yeah. A couple blocks. Maybe I'm asking the wrong person. I need to get Julia Lippmann here from the
yeah,
Ringer.
She would.
Does Vanessa Hudgens have any prior history with NBA players?
That I do not know.
Okay.
But, I mean, has that ever stopped an NBA player?
No, I'm just saying that would make me a little more wary.
Oh.
Like, just like, I'm glad if she's coming in fresh.
Yeah.
Then that's more exciting to me.
Okay.
Well, because this is like, this team, they like to have fun. Like, this is, yeah. I believe you're working on a story about this, but that's the vibe I got from Danny Green and some of their coaches that I've been talking to. Like, this team is, we'll talk about the quality of the team. Yeah. They're 35-9. They're obviously awesome, but like, they're kind of liking this Showtime thing.
Oh, sure. Like, okay. So I covered the Powell Kobe Lakers and something that always stuck with me was like, DJ Benga had a publicist, which just showed the level of, you know, glamour and Hollywood-esque stuff going on with that team. Well, this team, like JaVale McGee has a guy who he hires to do like special social media posts like after every game. Like, so he doesn't just put up a photo of him dunking. He has a video compilation of all the tweets that people send around the world when he does dunk in the game. And it's like a little video package. And JaVale McGee is a starter on the team, but he's
had a very nice year.
Oh yeah, he's been very good for them. And I'm not trying to criticize JaVale McGee in telling the story. I'm just saying he's not the high profile guy like a LeBron or AD or even a Kuzma
or Dwight
or Rondo. You know, he's lower or Caruso for that matter. He's lower on that totem pole, but he is embracing it too. Now, what I like about this team is the time they spend with one another. They don't need to do this. You don't need to all go for a Halloween party together, for LeBron's party together, for JaVale McGee's Christmas sweater party together, for Anthony Davis's cover of a magazine unveiling night together. Rondo said that they were in Oklahoma City a couple weekends ago, landed at 3 a.m, and like half the team hung out talking hoops till 6 a.m.
Yeah, I don't think that's unusual from what Danny was saying on the podcast, that even if you get in late, because these guys are all wired, like their sleep clocks are all screwed up.
Right.
You get in late after a game, it's like, yeah, you know, I need a little time to wind down.
Yeah, right.
Or wind up, I don't know.
Sure. I mean, talking hoops could definitely be code for other things going on, but I think the time matters. I do, because last year's team, it had a ton of problems, but, injuries at the top of the list, but roster construction, et cetera, et cetera. But you also had people at different stages of their life. This is a veteran laden team, and guys like Danny Green, Troy Daniels, Rondo, Jared Dudley, they know they're never going to play again on a team that's this good. And so let's maximize all these moments that we have here. And then LeBron, for the most part, and he's someone who obviously can kind of wear his emotions on his sleeve sometimes. He seems to be very satisfied with this group, and his kinship with Anthony Davis is a real thing. And that's great that he has a connection with a great player that he really probably hasn't had since Dwayne Wade. I mean, he had friendships in Cleveland and a lot of success in Cleveland, but I don't think he had the kind of respect in terms of I'm connecting with this one player because he is so good, just like I am so good with any player in Cleveland like he has with Anthony Davis.
Yeah, that's and the other thing about Anthony Davis that you have to repeat over and over again is that he's 26 years old. And so when Ingram, if and when Ingram makes the All-Star team and Lonzo is balling out and, you know, Kuzma is up and down, there's going to be this sort of like, oh, wow, they really give up. And all day, okay, they have no draft picks to trade. Right. They gave up a lot. You know, it's pretty. And they're like, no, well, you got Anthony Davis. Like, yeah. You got a guy who's going to be a top five MVP player for 6 years. I don't know how many years, who's going to take the baton from LeBron pretty fast and has had a monster season in his own right. Yeah, they're just like, it's funny. The Lakers are – the most interesting thing about the Lakers is that they're so good, and yet they're so good while they're still so clearly figuring out what their team is. So they're 35-9, first in the West by a lot. I think they're fourth in offense, fifth in defense. And just as an example, here's an example. I'll bring this up right now.
Mm-hmm.
AD, LeBron, and Kuzma.
Yeah.
Those three, AD, LeBron, and Kuzma. With neither center on the floor.
Yeah.
So that's like shorthand for what everyone thought their A closing lineup was going to be. You know, AD at center, both LeBron and Kuzma in two guards. 131 minutes this year. That's it. That's nothing. And they're plus 9,000 points in those 131 minutes. LeBron and AD by themselves without Kuzma and either of the centers, that's barely happened all year. Last night against the Knicks, I was very surprised they played Kuzma, LeBron, AD, and a center.
Dwight, I think, right?
And both of them, both centers for bits and pieces. Those lineups had played less than 10 minutes the entire season. Their closing lineup, one closing lineup that everyone's eager to see is Danny Green, KCP, LeBron, Kuzma, AD. That's played like 35 minutes this season, and it's almost a point a minute plus. LeBron and Rondo have been. What's interesting is that no matter what iteration of the team you look at, they've all been really good.
Yeah.
Like, except when LeBron's off the floor. That's it. And it's just very interesting that you look at them and you're like, I don't even have any. There's no nits to pick you other than, it'd be great if they were better with LeBron off the floor. But no matter what identity they have, when LeBron's on the floor, A, they're good, and B, their defense is good across the board.
Right. And so the first criticism that comes to mind for me is like they're a middling 3-point shooting team, but defensively there haven't been lapses, and that's why like guys like you know Caruso is a bit of a cult figure or whatever. People like him. You know, it's funny to see a fish out of water balding 25-year-old white dude or whatever with this group, but he is really good defensively. He gets after it, and guys like Avery Bradley like gets after it, and they feed off that energy. You know, now a guy like Kuzma, that's something that he hasn't proved consistently. But they had that win in Houston a week ago where Anthony Davis was out at the start of this road trip. Anthony Davis was out. Kuzma was challenged by Rajon Rondo at halftime. Like, hey, Russell Westbrook's tearing us up. Like, we just need an active, live body who's going to, you know, kind of give that physicality there. And it made a big difference with his defense in the second half on Russell Westbrook. And if he can do that, and then if Frank's going to help him out by experimenting with these lineups, because basically Kuzma like should play the three or the stretch four.
Yeah, Kuzma's a stretch four.
Right.
That's it. That's what he is.
Right. And the problem with that is Anthony Davis likes playing the four.
And LeBron is a four.
And LeBron's a four.
Well, this is the problem. This was the alleged problem that everyone pointed out already months ago, has not been a problem. LeBron is versatile enough that it doesn't really matter. If they're both on the floor, what matters is, can you play them with a center and Anthony Davis? And so far, the answer to that question has been no, until last night they tried it a little bit
right. Here
and there.
Are you offended that the NBA listed LeBron as a forward and not a guard on the All-Star ballot?
I don't know. Whatever was easier for me to get Luka, Harden, and LeBron all in the All-Star starting five was fine.
It worked out okay.
I just think they should stop listing anything. Just let us pick guys. I know we're picking lineups as if the coaches are going to be like, oh, we got to have a point guard on the floor. Let's strategize what pick and roll. It's a freaking all-star game. Just let us pick the best guys.
I picked Rudy Gobert as a West starter because partially an ode to centers.
Okay. So who did you not pick? Kawhi?
Kawhi.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
He missed some time. Gobert, I mean, 15 rebounds a game, three blocks.
I don't hate it.
Kawhi. I mean, Kawhi, I think he should be an all-star, of course.
I left Paul George off my all-star team. Too many missed games.
There you go.
Sorry, buddy. Right. You got too many guys in the West who are like imperfect players. Like Paul George is better than Devin Booker, Brandon Ingram, Donovan Mitchell, and Chris Paul. He's better than all those guys. Mm-hmm. But those guys are balling out every night.
Yeah.
Like if those guys were having average or below average seasons by their standards, yeah, you put Paul George with 500 fewer minutes into the All-Star game. He's Paul George.
Yep.
He's earned it. Karl Anthony Towns has not earned it. Wake me up when you win a playoff series. Paul George has earned it.
Game, maybe. They're in a tailspin right now.
But those guys are having great years, all of them, and they all deserve to make it. I'm sorry, but yeah, so you put Gobert over Kawhi. Boy, oh boy. It came down to Gobert, Jokic, and Kawhi for me. I put Kawhi.
I can't fault you for picking Kawhi. And, you know, do I think Kawhi's a better player? Of course. It was partially the center thing and partially some time missed and partially, like, I think the Clippers, like, This is like the reporter media nitty gritty side of things and maybe this is, you know, I admit that it's turning some bias on my opinion, but they like don't do the things consistently to try to grow the game while they hold a very important position as one of the three or four best teams in the league.
Well, don't the Clippers do the fake shoot-around? Or do the Lakers do the fake shoot-arounds too?
They've started been doing that the last couple of weeks.
That's
been a little upsetting.
Yeah, you know, look, this is the trade. First of all, I think Kawhi, because the Clippers took a lot of flack for this early in the season, and their PR apparatus would very aggressively come at you and say, I think Kawhi's only ducked media once after games. I think maybe twice, maybe one. At the time they were yelling at me, it was once.
So I've also been told that even if he doesn't duck it, it's an inordinate amount of time
that's inconvenient. And if you're on deadline, it sucks.
Right.
And like, that's understandable. But like Serge Ibaka, I don't know what he's like this year, but last year and the year before in Toronto, it would be, if you wanted to get Serge Ibaka after a game, you would have to wait until nobody was in the arena. And it was just because, like, Serge liked to take really long showers. And mm-hmm. I think he had, like, you know, what, I don't know what the hell was going on in there, but it just took a long time.
Yeah.
To the point that I stuck around after a game once because I needed Serge Ibaka. Yeah. And he came out and got dressed, and he looked at me and was like, you're still here? Just for me? And I was like, yeah. And I got two quotes from Serge. So, like, it's not unique to Kawhi. Okay. Anyway.
Well, again, so then, like, I don't want to obfuscate this and think I'm trying to punish him. I think he's an all-star. You know, it was a judgment call.
They're all going to make it. The bottom line is they're all going to make it.
Of course.
I'll tell you the scary thing. I wrote this today. He's starting to look like San Antonio Kawhi on defense a little bit the last couple weeks. Just like everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere. Like when he's the help guy on the pick and roll, he's halfway to the paint and halfway to the shooter, and he's not overcommitting, and he's on his toes, and he's got his arms out, and you can see the ball handler being like, I don't really want to throw either of these passes because this dude's in my way no matter where I go.
Right.
And he's taking balls from people again. He's never going to be like he was in like 2015, 2016. That was like you just couldn't dribble mm-hmm. near him. You just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Now but it's getting a little scary. Anyway, let's talk more about the Lakers because they have been the best team in the West all year. Part of the reason why Kuzma is so interesting and such a lightning rod is that he is the last one left from the young core.
Yeah.
Even dating back to like Nance and Clarkson and Randall and Russell, all those guys are gone except for Kuzma. And his fit is he's not going to play the position that he is naturally should play as long as these guys are here. And if they're playing a center 35 minutes a game, it's just hard to find him all the minutes and touches that he wants. However, as is par for the course for every team LeBron is on, the Lakers have, other than Anthony Davis being 26, completely mortgaged their future to build this team. They have no draft picks.
That's right.
The only young players of consequence that they have other than Anthony Davis, if you want to count him as young-ish or whatever, are Caruso and Kuzma. So if they trade Kuzma in a win-now kind of move, that's one young player out the door,
mm-hmm.
and that leaves Caruso. Now, maybe I'm forgetting somebody who's not playing much or something. I mean, Taylor Horton Tucker.
Would be the name. And I mean, Quinn Cook is not old.
Quinn Cook is not a pillar of, sure, of the 2023 Los Angeles Lakers. Fair. I don't have a sense for how active they are currently with Kuzma on the trade market. They definitely asked about Bogdanovich. That's for sure true. Kings Bogdanovich.
Right. They definitely asked about Covington. That's for sure true.
That would be... Look, every team that wants Covington, if you have like someone who's friends with Karl Anthony Towns, you should be leveraging that for all of its worth, because the Wolves want D'Angelo Russell so badly.
Right.
Like, as if the Warriors secretly have Michael Jordan playing point guard for their team. That's how badly they want D'Angelo Russell. There's no reason you would want him that badly on that contract unless Karl Anthony Towns just wants to hang out with D'Angelo Russell all the time and thinks D'Angelo Russell is awesome, because keeping Karl Anthony Towns happy is like one of three things that actually matters for the Timberwolves. Like, is Jared Culver good? Can we unload Andrew Wiggins' contract now that he stinks again? No. And is Karl Anthony Towns happy? Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, Gerson told our Eric Woodyard, he's as untouchable gets, I think, talking about Karl Anthony Towns.
Which, great, he should be. And I think that was Gerson being annoyed at reports in other places that rival executives think that Karl Anthony Towns may be unhappy. I don't know, what do you think happens with Kuzma? Can they find somebody?
So, I mean, Chris Haynes reported that they have some interest in Derrick Rose. And, like, obviously Derrick Rose is not young. But Derrick Rose, he's has another year guaranteed on his contract, cost-controlled, I think $7.5 million. I think if you could make that work somehow, just have him come. I mean, he's an automatic bucket, and that's kind of what this team is lacking a little bit. And say you're thinking about if the Clippers is the team, like if that's the real NBA Finals, Lakers Clippers playoff series. And obviously the Bucks are really good too, so I don't want to say if that. And you know, Philly has some stuff
East
too.
East has loaded with
right,
good
right.
teams.
So let's say, but say that's the series that you know you got to win in order to eventually win a championship. And you're worried about a guy like Lou Williams being able to come off the bench and give a spark, and worried about keeping pace, and maybe Kuzma won't be that guy. Like, I think Derrick Rose could really help them.
Yeah, there's been much ado about the lack of another ball handler, right, since they built this roster. Mm-hmm. Caruso can do it a little bit, but I don't know if you trust him really to run the offense when it matters. Rondo, shooting 36% from threes, had a nice year.
He's just had a ton of injuries. But there are times where he looks like he has one foot out the door in terms of his career, not in terms of his interest. He's been a positive influence on this team, and he's had some moments, you know, like they won that game at OKC with no LeBron and no AD, and Rondo balled out and Kuzma balled out, and it's like, okay, you still got something to give this team. But I don't know if there's a ton of trust in the Lakers brass that we want to have to rely on him. We could use him and benefit from him, but they'd like to shore up that position.
They've been, again, it's just they've been good with LeBron and Rondo all season. It hasn't tapered off, and that was a thing people were skeptical about. They've just been flat good all the time with LeBron on the floor. The thing that would make me worry about trading Kuzma for Rose, for instance, is if you have the Clippers in mind, or if you have a number of other teams in mind, the other big wing defender is an interesting dilemma for them. And it's a role Kuzma, in theory, has a shot to fill. And so that's why the opening game of the season, Kuzma didn't play. They tried Kentavious Caldwell-Pope on Kawhi Leonard, and Kawhi Leonard put him in the basket and ate his lunch.
KCP is also relatively young. We'll throw that
out. And he's decent.
Yeah.
KCP's
had a nice year.
But he can't guard those guys.
Yeah.
He can survive against Paul George for a little bit, but not Kawhi. Second game against Christmas, they put LeBron on Kawhi a lot. One of the biggest questions of the season for me, and I'd be interested to hear your take, I honestly don't know. I've asked some of their people. I've gotten different answers. Is like, when push comes to shove, is LeBron ready to take an assignment like that in a playoff game for 25 minutes? I don't think he is.
I think he's so important for them offensively that you're best served to have him in this kind of roamer position in the playoffs that the Cavs had some success with. And he did a little bit last night against the Knicks, actually. You know, he called it the Ed Reed position, where he's calling out the defensive coverages. He's stunning passing lanes. He had five steals.
Great. He's great at that. There's no question. He's playing hard this year in that
role. He's coming for weak side blocks and stuff like that. That one-on-one matchup, I don't know how much is it. Like, he just doesn't want it, and that could be a part of it. Or it could be just, like, straight up, it's just like the Zion conversation with David Griffin. Like, no. The most efficient way to manage what LeBron can give us is to save his energy for the most part on that end so he can be brilliant on offense.
I legitimately don't know the answer to that question. I just know that if you face the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals, you need an answer to that question that's not Kontavious Caldwell-Pope. It can be Danny Green a little bit. It can be Danny Green a little bit. He's not the same defender he was a couple of years ago. He's a little bit slower. Everyone could use another guy, but if LeBron isn't going to be that guy ever. And by the way, it's not a shot at LeBron. Like, Giannis didn't guard Kawhi in the conference finals last year, which I thought was a mistake at the time. It's hard to do everything. It's just hard to do everything when you're 25, let alone 35. It's hard to do everything. But and I bet LeBron could do it. I bet he's got a game in him. Game 7, it's like, let me have it for 25 minutes. Let me have it for 30 minutes. But you need a 7-game plan. And if you subtract Kuzma, who at the very least can buy, I think Kuzma's actually, the work he's put in on defense is underrated. I think he's become a decent multi-position defender who tries. Like, you can put him on Klay Thompson. They put him on point guards last night when they ran that super lineup out.
Yep.
He tries. And if he can buy you 8 minutes on Kawhi, not stop Kawhi. Let's be clear. Just make it so it's not a walkover.
Mm-hmm.
And you trade him for a guy who can buy you 0 minutes on Kawhi. That's a problem to me.
But what if you're going to make the trade, and then you also, like, can Andre Iguodala, if he ever is...
Sure, there's the name that's been hovering over, like, this entire discussion.
Can he give you 15 minutes on Kawhi, having not played basketball for 10 months? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
He's so damn smart, I bet he could. Yeah, the Lakers' dream, obviously, is, like, you just get Iguodala and Darren Collison and all these problems are solved, and bippity-boppity, we're the Lakers, let's move on.
Right.
Like, this is what happens to us. Things just fall into our lap, and we go move on. If they get those two guys, it's a big, big problem.
Yes, for sure.
Are they concerned? What have we not talked about in terms of their lineups and their rotation? I think this is the biggest question for them in the second half of the season is, do they veer in any direction in terms of their on-court identity, or do they just sort of go through, like, yeah, we'll try this for a little bit and this for a little bit, and we're good at everything? Like, do they coalesce into something, or do they just not even have to?
Well, they are already experimenting with, like, they're running some zone, and they've done
I was going to ask you
other,
about that.
Yeah, so they've done that, and then they've done some other coverages where, like, they may do it for, like, a quarter, and it's just, like, we want you guys to get comfortable with in game situations. We want to see what it looks like as a coaching staff. We want to then see what the numbers look like afterwards as we build up what our postseason playbook is going to look like. I think that's smart. I mean, you see guys in the summertime, for instance, like, they'll go to the gym. I'm just going to shoot left-handed today, or I'm just going to practice floaters all day. And the Lakers are kind of playing that game within a game, and they're still racking up wins, but how they're approaching the regular season schedule, Frank Vogel and his staff are kind of sprinkling in some stuff, some coverages. I don't know how much zone you'll see in the playoffs, but he's just getting them comfortable with these different looks. I think it's really smart. Ty Lue, when he was coaching LeBron's teams in Cleveland and knowing that they're going to have, you know, a postseason run or hoping for a postseason run, they would purposely run stuff in practice that they didn't work on in the regular season. But they just said, like, now we're going to do the playoff practice, which I thought it was a really smart way to keep your guys engaged and have them cognizant of the big picture. I think this is similar to that tact, but they're actually using it some in-game situations.
That's interesting because, you know, when the Lakers, like the other night against Boston, you were at that game, they start out 8-0. Mm-hmm. And I think they open with a lob dunk. I think you got another dunk somewhere in there, and they're preening, and their bench is going crazy. That's when the other teams in the league, there's a bunch of, they're front runners. That's a word you hear, front runners. I don't think they're front runners. The vibe I get from them, and you're around them way more than I am, but I've been in LA a fair bit and whatever. They might have fun and do all this, but I think they're serious. And I think they have a sense of like, I think even if they made no moves, I think internally they feel like we have a team that can do it. And veteran players know when they have a really good team that maybe can't do it and when they have a team that can actually do it.
Yes.
And they think they can do it.
Yeah, that belief is there. That standard for the group is there. And I think that four-game losing streak woke them up a little bit again and, you know, just got them a little, you know, Frank used the term edgy, but I think that's true. The Boston game was surprising because, you know, while I can see maybe where the front-running moniker comes from, they had a bad loss when LeBron didn't play to the Nuggets at home. But other than that, like, the Celtics game was the only game I can think of where like, they just didn't make a run or fight back. You know, they had many comeback victories, but they had also games that they lost where they just made it a game. And so I was just surprised. But, you know, Frank said we ran up against a desperate team. And
Celtics were angry.
Celtics had like 16 threes or something like that, and the Lakers had 7. And, you know, that's kind of the game.
So there was a moment where, like, oh, you would hear that the Lakers were beating up on bad teams and struggling, allegedly, against good teams. They are 23-1 against teams below 500. They're 12-8 against teams that are 500 or better. Here's the West standings. Lakers 12-8 against 500 or better. Jazz, who are now second in the West, 6-9. Clippers 11-8. I guess the Clippers have an asterisk because their real team has played 15 games or something. Nuggets 9-7. Dallas, who just took a huge blow with Dwight Powell getting hurt and tearing his Achilles. I mean, that is a big. Casual fans don't know who Dwight Powell is. He means a lot to their team and how they play. 7-11. Rockets 9-8. Thunder 7-13. Everyone else terrible. So the Lakers literally have the best record against teams above 500 in the Western Conference. Yeah.
And LeBron had some fun with that after the Houston win, just being like, "Oh, I thought we only beat bad teams, right?" Like, yeah, I mean, now the elite. I don't know how you view it. I see like probably 4 teams I could see winning it all, maybe 3. Like Lakers, Clippers, and Bucks are kind of where I'm at, and so they are 0-3 against the Clippers and Bucks.
And the Bucks game was a disaster. Now
it was at the end of a long road trip. Kuzma wasn't playing, et cetera, et cetera. Giannis had his best shooting game maybe of his life.
To your question of are there any other teams? Before the season, my tier one title contenders in my little tiers column were Milwaukee, Philadelphia, who just, you know, again, now Josh Richardson is injured. Well, I'm still TBD on Philadelphia. Who I picked to make the finals.
Me too.
Lakers, Clippers, and Jazz. I thought the Jazz had the best two-way potential of the Jazz, Nuggets, Rockets, smorgasbord in the sort of 2-5 area of the West. The Jazz are on fire right now.
Yeah.
I guess I still think they do have the best two-way potential of all those teams.
Now the Lakers, I think, I've played them twice before they were on fire, and they just handled them.
Well, they have Royce O'Neal is their answer in-house to this who guards these big wing questions. Like, he's fine, but you know, they have some more questions to answer on defense and some other teams other than Gobert being amazing. Someone in this Miami, Toronto, Boston, Nuggets group is going to make a trade and try to elevate themselves into that group. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Raptors, who are 30-14. That's crazy.
Right.
They have the same record as they did last year, basically.
That is wild.
And they haven't been healthy.
Yeah.
Like all year.
Yeah, Nick Nurse knows what he's doing.
Nick Nurse might be the coach of the year right now.
That's pretty remarkable, actually.
I think
the first franchise ever to lose the finals MVP. The summer right after winning the championship, and you get them right back. Wow,
they're third in the East.
Yeah,
they're a game out of second in the East. Yeah. I kind of don't believe that they're a real threat to Milwaukee to win the East, but they're really good.
Mm-hmm.
One of these teams is going to make a move. I don't know who it's going to be for. As you said, Drew Holiday is going to be the obvious name. It's too bad that Bradley Beal – it's not too bad. It's too bad for trade Knicks.
Yes.
It's great for the Wizards. It's great for Bradley Beal if he wants to be in Washington that he is there. It's too bad for trade Knicks.
It's kind of weird. Like, don't the Wizards have the number one offense or close to it?
They did for a while. I believe they're – I'll tell you where they are right now. They're down to – They're down to 11th.
Oh, they're 11th. Okay.
Yeah, but they also took a bunch of injuries. Like Bertans was hurt. Mo Wagner was a big part of that. He's hurt. Now they're starting these crazy lineups where you haven't hurt anybody.
Right. I mean, obviously 11th is a different story. But had they finished in, say, the top five in offense and had the record like they did, like what would that say?
I didn't have Bradley Beal on my 12-man All-Stars, and I feel bad about that. Like he is. I mean, you look at the lineups they're starting. It's like. Bradley Beal is. You might as well put three guys on Bradley Beal and make everyone else take shot. It's hard. It's hard. You know. It's. There's. You only get 12 All Stars, and that's it. The biggest question I had about the Lakers, and maybe it turns out to be not relevant. I thought they would reach a period in the year or a matchup when playing LeBron, AD, and a center became problematic for their offense. And you can see it in spurts, like AD rolls and there's just a jumble of bodies and he loses the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Or AD spends three straight possessions spotting up behind the arc because LeBron and JaVale are running pick and roll and Anthony Davis, you know. This is one of the interesting things. You see some teams dabble with putting their centers on AD to neuter his post-up game.
Right.
But all that does is make it easier for the Lakers to run the LeBron-AD pick and roll because
exactly.
you can't switch with your center on LeBron. It's an interesting little chess match. They haven't run into that, though. They've been fine playing these big lineups. I do think they will face...
three-point shooting, like, sorry to interrupt you.
No.
They've been encouraging him all year, like, shoot more threes. Mike Penberthy is doing a great job, and like, he's really, like, tweaked his form, helped Anthony tweak his form. But...
He's shooting 30%.
Yeah, he still only maybe takes... I don't know. What is he averaging? Three threes a game?
Three and a half attempts a game.
They want him to get around five.
If they're going to play this way, he's going to have to shoot threes. I thought, and I do think they will reach a playoff series where they need more spacing. I thought we would see that more in the regular season, and I wanted to see how they, A, do you play Kuzma in those small lineups, or do you go three guards plus Bron plus AD? And B, how good are those lineups defensively? Those questions to me are still unanswered because they haven't had to answer them. Like, do you have a sense of, like, which way they prefer to play? Obviously, the players appear to like this way, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, they appreciate what the centers bring to the equation. I mean, they lead the league in blocks for a reason as a team. And, you know, JaVale in particular is someone I think LeBron has developed a rapport with this year. And, you know, they talk about this team spending time together. There's still little cliques. And JaVale makes the list of the, you know, Randy Mims and LeBron plus other clutch clients and JaVale will be hanging out with those group. So, I mean, there's an appreciation there. And guess what? He'll play 15 minutes a night, never complains. You know.
And once a game, he'll get the ball, face up, do some dribble stuff where you're like, oh, he's going to fall. This is going to end badly. And he'll make a hook shot. And you're like, all right, JaVale.
Yeah, he's had hook shots. He's had, you know, rip through, put it on the floor, and Statue of Liberty dunks this year. Hit a couple threes.
Has he hit threes this year?
Yeah.
Dwight hit a couple,
I
right?
think they're both shooting really well combined. They're somewhere around, like, I want to say, like, 6 for 10.
Dwight, JaVale is 3 of 5.
Okay.
It's a career high. He had made two combined.
And I think Dwight might be even better than that. Maybe Dwight's, like, 3 for 3.
JaVale's transformation from, like, goofy ne'er-do-well to beloved piece of, like, teams that are trying to win the championship and in some cases did win the championship. I didn't see that one coming.
He's an intellectual guy. And so, you know, the silliness stuff, I think, was just a guy who has a lot of interest sometimes. And it came out in ways that was misunderstood, but
he's a two-time champion.
Two-time champion with the Warriors, and you know, he's a part of this group. Is a guy that I mean, some of the blocks he's had recently, I mean, he had one on Terrence Ross. That is, you know, when the NBA TV does their top dunks of the season, top blocks of the season, it'll most likely be number one. It was incredible. It was like the one that LeBron had in the finals against the Spurs. I'm blanking on his name now.
Splitter. Thiago Splitter.
Yes. Where the wrist comes all the way back and you have just as much force that the player is coming in with the ball trying to stuff it through the rim. So I think they're okay playing the centers. I don't think they're all of a sudden going to see it disappear. I think that was a calculation going into the year where, like, two things we thought that they were saying they're going to do, it was going to change. They're saying they're going to play LeBron at point guard. It's like, okay, sure, we'll see about that. And they're saying that they're going to actually play a center alongside AD. And we're like, okay, sure, AD is going to play center. No, it stayed that way, and they've had success with LeBron at the point and Anthony at the four.
The other question is the fifth starter, and they've settled on Bradley. I thought KCP looked good in that role. The Bradley lineup, both lineups have been very good. Again, the Lakers are just really good no matter who plays. The Bradley lineup has been better. I think Bradley does fit that group for a couple of reasons. Number one, they seem to like him and his sort of menace, the energy he brings is
really
like a pest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, watch him just go over screens and stay attached at the hip of the guy he's defending. The effort is always there. And then talking about this team, getting back to that whole, you know, front runner misnomer, like, he takes it really serious. Like, if he does anything wrong in terms of, like, he didn't show maximum effort or he didn't execute the proper way on defensive possession, like, he beats himself up. And, you know, they have a group of professionals. The roster construction on this team, Rob Pelinka and Kurt Rambis deserve a good degree of credit for.
I just can't believe we're saying Kurt Rambis' name in this contest in 20, the year of our Lord, 2020. Bradley also, he's much better defending point guards than he is defending wings because of his size. Mm-hmm. And his just pest tenacity getting over screens is just more useful. And so the Lakers have put him permanently in that position, and that's good. He's also a really good cutter. And if you watch, it's not just he doesn't just cut the score, which he does. LeBron will hit him backdoor a couple times a game. He cuts in ways that open up shots for other people. And that's a very useful skill to have as the fifth guy in this lineup. I think, I thought that would be an interesting sort of, like, I wonder who they're going to settle on. They'll probably try a few different things. Like, they've settled on Avery Bradley, and it works. It's better than Rondo. It's better than Caruso. Like, it's just been a good decision.
Yeah. And then the KCP brings, a pace factor. He's very good at streaking ahead in transition. Can hit you the corner three. He'll put the ball on the floor, get his head down, get a head of steam, and attack the rim. And the energy he brings to the game is something they feed off in a different way. And then defensively, like, he's not as technically skilled as Bradley is, and he's a little slight. Like, he has muscle, but he kind of gets bodied sometimes, but he brings the effort.
You might say he brings a certain clutch factor to the team. Have they been fun to cover? Like, where do they rank as, like, LeBron? You've been around how many LeBron teams in a row now?
Six now.
How are they different? What are they like to be around?
I mean, the 2016 team, just because what ended up being the result of it, is, you know, gonna be most likely the favorite team I've ever covered in my career because I've developed bonds with those guys. But this team is rivaling that right now. I mean, just guys like, you know, I think a lot of us who've been fortunate enough to cover the league for a while, like, have a good relationship with Jared Dudley already. Like, even if you only saw him sporadically, but to be around him all the time is great. Rondo can be a burr in my ass, but I kind of like it.
Really?
Yeah.
In terms of?
He's just difficult sometimes, but he has, like, a little, like, mischievousness underneath the being difficult.
Will he criticize your questions and stuff like that?
Yeah, look, sometimes he'll, like, just not answer it or one-word it. Or sometimes he'll, like, just say something super sarcastic but, like, deliver it. It's so deadpan that, like, I believe it. Like, I wrote – so I was talking about Anthony Davis wanting to shoot more threes. The team imploring him to shoot more threes. Rondo said after a game earlier in the year in OKC, like, yeah, like for this road trip, like Frank wants AD shooting 12 threes a game. And I wrote it like facts. And he like, no.
It's not the record quote.
Yeah, man, he just made up a number. Like, you know, like, and he'll do stuff like that. And it's like, I don't know. I find it kind of fun. You feel challenged to say he'll shut you down after the first question. Then you just rephrase it and you kind of stand your ground and he'll usually break. So I enjoy that. Also just getting to know, like last year's locker room, it was not a good one. There was a lot of stress all year long. And so to be around some of the guys who are back from that team, guys like JaVale and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who I've gotten to know this year, there's a fruitfulness to that. Like you feel like there's some more depth to it, and I enjoy that.
What is I walked into the hotel the Lakers are staying at here the other day, and on the couch in the lobby was DeMarcus Cousins, scowling, and I just had forgotten about him. And I believe there are rumblings a month or so ago that there's a chance he plays this season.
Frank Vogel has said several times that you know they are operating as if he could return.
What is that? Because DeMarcus Cousins doesn't want to come back and play six token minutes as your third string center. Are there any? The chemistry is such a precious thing. Mm-hmm. Like all these teams that are winning a million games, the trade deadline's coming up. I've talked to people who are like, "Man, I'm afraid to trade like our 14th guy because the chemistry is so good. It's so fragile." Is there just introducing something like that? It's complicated, right?
Oh, super complicated. Because he's proved his value to this team in being one, someone who gets along with both AD and LeBron. So that's pretty important. Those are your two best players. As someone who will challenge LeBron.
That's interesting.
Like in terms of like talking, you know, like saying what he sees while he's on the bench and, you know, part of LeBron's defensive recommitment, perhaps reminding him of that.
DeMarcus Cousins is yelling at LeBron to play defense?
Urging him. I won't say yelling. Urging.
I'd like to see the proverbial shoe on the other foot on that one.
But I think that's a valuable thing that he's bringing to the team. And, you know, it's such a question, though, because – Dwight and JaVale are outperforming their contracts, and they deserve the time that they're getting.
You got to give everyone a look, right? Like, if he's healthy and he can contribute, you got to give everyone a look. There was another situation like this that I'm blanking on what it is around the league, either this year or last year, where I'm just like, I remember thinking to myself, that guy's good, but I'm cool. Like, I'm cool with what we got. I kind of feel that way about Cousins. You got to try it. You got to see how he looks because he might win you a quarter in the playoffs. But, like I'm cool. We're 35-9. This works. I'm cool with what we got.
Now, I could be definitely reading too much into this because it's unguarded shots and it's a lot of them are – he's not even doing full jump shots yet because he's not in that stage of his rehabilitation. His jump shot looks really good, or his shot looks really good. I said they're not full. So could he provide you some stretch 5 minutes that those two guys can't? Maybe that could be his role. Like, you know, a la Channing Frye with Cleveland when they had that other success, he barely played in the finals when they got there because of matchups.
But after hitting 100 threes against the Hawks.
He killed the Hawks. Right. And maybe that could be something he could provide that they don't have without him. At the same time, maybe his roster spot would be best served, being traded or waived so they could get a guy like Andre Iguodala.
Who's the most famous celebrity you've seen at a Lakers game this year that's not a regular? Like, Jack doesn't count. Has Denzel been in any games this year?
Several. Denzel, great part about him. Brad Turner of the LA Times has been, you know, just really on it. In the LA sports scene for years, and is like friends with Denzel, and I sit next to Brad sometimes. And Denzel will come over to Press Row and hang like during the game.
Who? Any other unexpected?
Larry David's like my hero, so he came to a couple games, and I'm just like staring at him. It's awesome.
Curb is so good. Yeah. I actually watched the first episode a few days ago.
Oh God,
so good.
It was fantastic. you know, Kim and Kanye were in the press room like a couple weeks ago.
That's right. Yes.
That was cool.
It's just next week is Lakers Clippers 3. I will be at that game.
Oh, excellent.
I'm going to LA on Sunday.
Yeah.
Those games are like, you got dudes sitting in the 10th row. Like, I remember that guy.
For sure.
You're in the 10th row.
Right.
It's quite a scene in Los Angeles. Not quite the same here on the East Coast, Dave.
The Knicks game. How about Amin Al-Hassan sitting courtside at the Knicks game with J. Cole?
Getting some camera time.
Oh, my God.
He's blown by all of us,
yeah,
I guess.
Man. I did sit courtside for one professional basketball game, a Sparks game.
Okay.
But it was cool to sit courtside.
I've sat courtside at a Mercury Sparks game in the playoffs, and you better believe I was rooting for Taurasi. And I did, did not care.
She's the best.
She was throwing no look passes, talking all sorts of shit. I could hear it up close. It was awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Dave McMenamin, anything you want to plug? Anything that's coming out soon? Anything you want to mention?
Yeah. We're going to have, we kind of teased it earlier, but I have a story coming out on the Lakers kind of embracing Showtime 2.0.
Yes.
Run date TBD, but some good anecdotes in there. I wanted to kind of save some of them, but I'm pleased with how that one turns out. And then I won't say what it is, but working on another story about a signature move of LeBron's that he is increasingly leaning on.
You're going to just tell me by eye contact because you don't want to say it, but I have a 10 things item loaded up about LeBron. I think the left to right spin in transition is the LeBron move. Your eyes are just, I'm not going to say what you're doing, but,
nor will my left.
LeBron has a lot of signature moves, and his signature play, of course, is a defensive play. The greatest play of his career is the block.
Yeah. Chase down block.
But it's funny how,
You know that. Yeah, that's I'm exploring that move.
Boy, when he does that, there's just nothing you can do. I don't know what you're supposed to do other than be Kawhi. I don't know what you're supposed to do.
It's unguardable. If he executes it right, if he spins at the right time and he's in transition already like a locomotive, it's.
The physics of that is just like, why is that so good? I'm interested to read it. And I'm also interested to read the Showtime 2.0. And I hope you can include the Vanessa Hudgens. Hudgens detail.
It's always a tough thing to like, I feel like I have a good rapport with Kyle Kuzma, but you don't really want to ask him about it. You know what I mean? I've covered two teams that had a player that dated Khloe Kardashian in my career.
Well, obviously the Cavs.
Yeah. And the Lakers.
Who dated her on the
Lamar.
Lakers?
Lamar. So I don't know.
I think I should. We should just stop talking.
Yeah, good idea.
I think we should just stop talking. All right, Dave, your coverage of the Lakers is outstanding. And this is not an easy beat. I mean, this is one of those beats where like you get it. I've never had a beat like that where it's the whole world is watching you and everything's a story and it's a traveling circus. That's not easy. That's stressful. And I think you've done a great job, but it's been fun to see. And I hope the traveling circus continues to entertain you.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, sir. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.